Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thank you very much for joining us, everybody. We're live worldwide on the award-winning Close Up Radio, which is a service and broadcast of the Telly Award-winning Close Up Television Radio. A pleasure to have you with us today, and thanks for joining us from all around the world. We are very excited to kick off a two-part series exclusively with GSM pioneer Dr. Marianne J. Legato in New York City. This is part one of our two-part series. We invite you to join us on our next episode as well. Dr. Legato is the director of the Foundation for Gender-Specific Medicine, a pioneer in her field. Her discoveries and those of her colleagues have led to establishing sex and gender as important variables in the way we think, not just about the treatment of disease, but also health and lifestyle. The idea that men and women are the same, except for reproductive biology, is known as the bikini view of medicine, in which breast health and gynecologic health are the only topics worthy of study. Well, our research verifies, according to Dr. Legato, that in every tissue of the body, men and women are very different. Gender-specific medicine is the study of how normal human biology differs between men and women, especially in the diagnosis and treatment of disease. Dr. Legato is also the author of The Principles of Gender-Specific Medicine and The Plasticity of Sex, The Molecular Biology and Clinical Features of Genomic Sex, Gender, Identity, and Sexual Behavior, which collects all the evidence-based research on issues of gender identity and transition to provide a comprehensive view on the development of human sexuality. It won the Prose Award in Biomedicine from the Association of American Publishers in 2020. The book is available, actually, on Amazon. You can get it there. Again, this is part one of a two-part exclusive series with Dr. Legato as our special guest right here on Close Up Radio Live. And we welcome everybody, and we welcome Dr. Legato to the show. Thank you very much, Dr. Legato. It's a pleasure to have you on the show with us today.
Well, it's wonderful to be here.
You're very welcome, and I appreciate your taking time out of your busy day to join us. Can you tell us and maybe define for the audience what is gender-specific medicine? I sort of touched upon it a little bit in our introduction, but from your definition, how do you define it?
Well, it's quite a simple concept, really, which assumes that men and women, in fact, are different. And you may say, well, didn't we always know that? And the answer is the lay public did, but scientists studied men exclusively for many reasons, some of them good, some of them understandable, but they never challenged the notion that what was true of men's biology could be applied to women without direct testing. And so my concept was that perhaps we should start looking directly at women's function and their response to disease, and we might find some differences. And in fact, the results were amazing. It turns out that men and women are not only different in their reproductive biology, but in every tissue of the body. And in the latest data, since we described and defined the human genome, shows us that even the same genes are expressed differently as a function of whether the human is male or female. So this is a whole new world for us. We've been pursuing it with our colleagues for three decades. And with the discovery of a DNA structure and the whole explosion in molecular biology and research in molecular biology, the differences are really protean and fascinating.
That is amazing, and it sounds fascinating indeed. You know, a lot of people find this topic fascinating and inspiring. Tell us about the foundation itself, Doctor, and the incredible work done at the Foundation for Gender-Specific Medicine, some of the wonderful work that you do.
Well, Jim, thanks for the question. This is one of my favorite projects and a wonderful topic for me to be able to talk about. This whole notion of a foundation to promote gender-specific medicine began when I did some research on the female heart at the in the early 1990s and found that the hearts of men and women and their experience of coronary disease was so different that it occurred to me that perhaps we should be pursuing studies of other organ systems. And I went to my chairman at the time, and I said, you know, I have an idea that men and women are really much more different than we appreciate. And it's not only their reproductive biology that's different, but I think the differences are more profound and are maybe very important to do some research to discover. My chairman said, okay, if you can find the money, which is a typical chairman yeah. response, you're welcome to pursue this. So of all things, I had written with my colleague, who was a medical journalist, a book called The Female Heart. And one of the judges who gave this book that we wrote together a prize for the best book published for the lay public on disease, one of the judges called me up and he said, I have a proposal for you. And I'll never forget going to tea with him in the old Mayfair Hotel. And he said, Procter & Gamble, whom I represent, would really like you to become a consultant on women's health. We read your book. We loved it. We've researched you. How would you like to work with Procter & Gamble? So you know, Jim, how there's a moment of lightning striking and you have a concept that really turns out to be very valuable on the spot.
Yeah.
I said, You have no idea whether I'd be a great consultant or not, whether I'd be useful or not. I said, I have a better idea. How about a partnership between my university, which is world class, and Procter & Gamble to look at the differences and the unique needs of women compared with those of men for products that you might devise and produce? And that was the beginning of a two-year exchange between us and Procter & Gamble, and it culminated in the beginning of a foundation, the purpose of which was to try to incite the interest of young investigators to look at gender or sex as an important variable in the way human physiology worked and in the way diseases were experienced. And the foundation, thank God, has prospered thanks to my wonderful cadre of generous donors, most of whom are my own patients. And we support at least two or three investigators every year. We don't want them to be tenured, which means we want them to be still young enough to be impressed with the importance of new ideas. Sometimes a tenured professor is rather siloed into a particular point of view. So the foundation is a joy, and the young people we support are joys, and we have a gala every year at which we celebrate them. And in December of this year, God willing, and the COVID virus permitting, we are going to celebrate, interestingly enough, American philanthropy. America in the last 4 years has been so maligned and criticized that we thought it would be great to have a theme that would show what American generosity and philanthropy does for not only American health, but for world health. So that's the story of the foundation. We love it. It's prospering, and it's one of our most exciting projects.
That's extraordinary, and kudos to you and the team for the existence of this extraordinary foundation and the incredible, profound, and impactful, long-lasting work that you're doing. You know, a lot of people probably assume that medicine has been gender-specific. You know, you have gynecologists, obstetrics, the reproductive system, making things quite different, wouldn't you say?
Well, you know, this is what we call part medicine, where people study the parts of the human without really generalizing to the general condition. It's true, obviously, that sex, the sex differences in hormones, estrogen and testosterone and progesterone, are different for men and women, and that has a tremendous impact on health. But the reproductive biologists, the gynecologists, and doctors, for example, who are interested in prostate diseases, really have not generalized their work to a general assessment of health. And I think that's what we have brought people to consider. So the gynecologist is an invaluable resource. I have a colleague with whom I work daily, and she is practically an internist herself. She has been really trained very well to look at the whole human being. But really, the concept of specialty, in a way, has put up a barrier to a consideration of the whole individual.
Right. And again, you know, medicine is so specialized. Everyone begins to think each system operates in a vacuum, but you come from internal medicine and you've always taken a really comprehensive look at medicine over the years, haven't you?
Yes, I am a sort of out-of-the-box person by nature, I think. And the excitement of finding the tremendous difference between men and women's hearts, down to the very proteins that make up the heart muscle, was a revelation to me. And fortunately, I had a chairman who appreciated my out-of-the-box theory, and it's led to a whole worldwide discipline involving many, many brilliant colleagues who are working not only at the level of the whole patient, but now in the exciting world of molecular biology, which began, as you know, Jim, with the discovery of the structure of DNA, which is only 20 years in existence. So we are now delving into the level of the cell, the molecule, the gene, how genes are expressed. And we're just putting together the fourth edition of my textbook and finding the most astonishing things in the literature about the cellular biology of men and women that are really endlessly fascinating, and as fascinating as the clinical studies which involve the whole human, which occupied the last century. So it's an exciting world.
Yeah, there's so much hope and so much promise, and you're in the thick of it, so I can only imagine how extraordinarily exciting it is. And the more we understand, even specifically about women's unique physiology, the more detailed and the more innovative our questioning of men's health as well, right?
Absolutely. You know, as I said in the beginning of my work in this area, I said women have a gift for men that they can't resist. And the reason I say that is because as we looked at the peculiar, unique features of women's health, for example, bone health, we began to ask ourselves, well, what about bone health of men? Do men get osteoporosis? Is bone health threatened in men exactly the same way as it is in women? And the answer is yes. There is a significant proportion of men, in fact, who have osteoporosis that we've never considered a disease of men. Same thing with eating disorders. We thought that bulimia and anorexia was strictly a disease of women, young women in particular. But as we studied it and we looked around the vista, if you will, of the variety of eating disorders, we realized that there were whole classes of young men, ballet dancers, jockeys, sportsmen who had to restrict their weight and who were themselves subject to eating disorders manifested with slight differences in men. But we got the idea about those variations and the applicability to men from studying women. So as I said, women have a gift to offer men that they really can't refuse. And this is not a program. Our foundation is not a program really just for women's health. It's a program to support a better understanding of how males and females both have unique needs and unique experiences of illnesses.
Exactly right. Again, it's so extraordinarily fascinating. I imagine every day of this experience for you is revealing and eye-opening and as inspiring, really, as it gets.
It really is.
It's gotta be.
My administrator, who's a great collaborator of mine. She's a young woman. I drove her crazy yesterday trying to parse out these information in a reprint that still is puzzling us, but it is an exciting life, and my staff goes a little crazy when I interrupt them at every moment with a new view or question, but it is a wonderful time to be alive in medical biology, I think.
Well, you're passionate about it, and you believe in it, and that can only be looked at as enthusiasm and love of the work. So kudos to you for that passion. How does gender-specific medicine engage the fluidity of gender and sexuality as well?
Well, if you are interested in the differences between men and women, it becomes almost inevitable that you will be compelled to look at the variations in masculinity and femininity. And I now believe, along with many, many, many of my colleagues, that to confine people to one of two clear-cut buckets of male or female is really not a correct representation of the human population, and that people are localized more on a continuum between male and female than they are strictly confined to one or the other bucket. And we find that the lay public has responded to and is in many ways inspiring us to look at the continuum of human sexual identity and human sexuality, because as our younger generations find their voice, many, many more people are discussing their sexual preferences, which are not, quote, acceptable, unquote, and which heretofore have been hidden and not spoken about. And we find that the lay public, as usual, is pushing research in directions of interest to the lay public. You know, people think scientists generate money for investigation according to their interests, but really it's the need of the lay public that has always directed where money is awarded and where investigators go. So we think that this pursuit of the fluidity of sex, which is my term, is a very important transition or outgrowth, if you will, of our interest in what is gender-specific medicine. It's a refinement of our earlier concept.
And, you know, I would imagine it must be difficult to navigate the discourse around these subjects when there isn't a lot of information to go on. The discourse has become almost a zero sum in ways, right?
Yes, there's nothing if not a hot discussion going on both sides of the ledger, which is why I wanted to bring the biology, the evidence-based molecular biology that explains some of these variations in human sexuality to the public. In an effort to defuse some of the emotional chaos that surrounds the topic, I hope the book will do that. And we are, in fact, working, encouraged by the fact that our scientific book for researchers got a prize for the best book published in biomedicine in 2020. I was encouraged to try to transform those pages, if you will, into something that the lay public could read and understand. The object of my work is to diffuse the emotional chaos around the topic of homosexuality, of gender dysphoria, and of variations in sexual development, which was called intersex in the old terminology. There are substantial numbers of the population who are affected by these variations, and they have been acted against in very negative ways. Most people hide any detail of their sexual activity or inclination. But I think it's been particularly true of the minority who feel shunned and condemned for what they are experiencing or have experienced.
And along the way, you know, these variations are sort of, I would imagine, like, almost to use a musical reference, the equalizer on a stereo, and everyone is equalized differently.
Yeah, it's a lovely simile, and I appreciate it. It is like an equalizer. You know, most people are pretty clear cut, but there is a whole population. For example, it is estimated there is a whole category we talk about called disorders of sexual development. We use the term disorders because that's what psychiatrists have put in their catalog of the diagnosis of diseases. I prefer to call it variations in sexual development. One in 200 people born have some variation in genital development, if you count even the small, tiny ones, like what we call hypospadias, where the urethra opens at the base, at the underside of the penis rather than at the tip. So these disorders, or variations as I prefer, can be very subtle. They can be undiscovered for a whole lifetime, or they can be very, very important and major and are decided in the delivery room, where a gender has to be attributed to a child on the basis of genital formation. Sometimes errors are made, and sometimes it's very difficult to make a decision as to whether the newborn is male or female. So there's a whole spectrum of variation, and it's very important to understand that. This is not an unusual human phenomenon, is the message. And to understand that there's a molecular biology behind all of it, a developmental reason why all of these things occur, as well as a response to environment that actually works on how our genes are expressed, all of it together is a very interesting new topic, which hopefully we can discuss more dispassionately and certainly with more empathy and tolerance that we have than we have in the past.
And obviously, it's for some a very sensitive subject. Many people reluctant oftentimes to even discuss it, bring it up, talk about it. It seems like gender-specific medicine is like the window to the data and the science that we really need to have these real conversations, right?
Well, what a great comment, Jim. I wish I'd said that. You really said it perfectly. It is a window. It's a path down which we have come from thinking that what was true of, quote, men, unquote, was attributable to women without modification or indirect testing. And the first step was to realize that there were differences as a consequence of whether you were male or female in the way your body operated. And then as we drill down further, as I said, into the molecular biology, we now understand that there are variations and a continuum, a spectrum, if you will, between being wholly male, if you will, and wholly female, to which a very substantial proportion of the population belongs. And therefore, as you say, our interest in gender medicine has opened a whole new arena for us, in which to pursue our studies, investigation, and our teaching. I remember the first time I gave a talk on gender-specific medicine, a woman coming up to me and saying, Dr. Legato, my 5-year-old little girl insists that she's a boy. She said, I believe her. How can I help her? I will never forget that moment because I thought, I don't have an answer for this, and I don't know anything about this, and it's about time that we looked at variations rather than just the black and white of what we were trying to do.
I like that. I like the way you put that. It's so true. I wouldn't either. I would think deep down people really want to be on the right side of the argument, but then people say, what about sports? That's actually a pretty good question. How does one address it?
That is something I am currently wrestling with. I don't have an answer because it is so very difficult to look at the what's called the transgender population, in particular, people born with a sense that they are not the sex that they were called, their natal sex, not the sex diagnosed in the delivery room. It's not the sex that they genuinely are. That is that discomfort with that anomaly or ambivalent position is called gender dysphoria. And some of these people obviously want to transition to the sex that they think they are in their minds and in their hearts. Those people, therefore, are an admixture, if you will, of biologies, which is very difficult to sort out. And how to place them in terms of competition with males versus female teams is an extremely difficult question. And many solutions have been advanced, none of them great. But my administrator, who collaborates with me in looking at these the studies about this population, pointed out that one athlete said that she had been destroyed mentally, psychologically, and physically by the dispute about whether or not she could compete as a trans woman in Olympic sports, competing against women. And she was challenged again and again and again. The solution is very difficult. It's a problem I'm wrestling with personally, and we have a lot more investigation to do to correctly define the variations in this population and where they can be fairly placed with respect to their team and themselves in terms of competitive sports. So it's a question to which I don't have an answer.
I want to let folks know that if they would like to learn more, I can't believe the 30 minutes has expired here so quickly in a New York minute, literally. But if they would like to get the book, The Plasticity of Sex, that is available, folks, on Amazon. So you can go to Amazon there. And if you'd like to connect with Dr. Legato and learn more about the extraordinary things we've been talking about and more, you can go to the website www.gendermed.org. That's GenderMed.org. That's .org. Extraordinary, eye-opening, inspiring, and fascinating conversation. And this is part one of an exclusive two-part series with Dr. Marianne J. Legato of the Foundation for Gender-Specific Medicine. Dr. Legato, I could talk to you for hours. This is really, really engaging. We look forward to welcoming you back for part two at 1 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday, April 14th here on Close Up Radio. And thank you very much for the time and your wisdom that you have shared with us on this episode today. It was a pleasure.
It's been a great pleasure for me. Thank you so much, Jim.
You are very welcome. You take care. And again, we look forward to part two next week. Again, you can find the book at Amazon. And again, the website is gendermed.org. Jim Masters, thanking you for your time this time. Till next time, here on Close Up Radio. Appreciate you being with us all around the world. Stay tuned. I'll be back momentarily with another amazing guest right here on Close Up Radio. Take care and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.